Wake up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. Good evening. This is Michael Dean, and it's After Dark, so it's Michael Dean After Dark. This is the show that is basically a game show, and the way you lose is by talking about tyranny. This is basically the show that libertarians would have after the government's gone, and there's nothing else to complain about, because we figure there's enough to complain about out there already and enough people complaining about it. So we're not burying our head in the sand. We're just talking about fun stuff. And my co-host tonight, it's the debut of Diana Kyler. How you doing, Diana?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for being had. So where are you? You are our second. We have two hosts from your state. Where are you from?
I am currently in Cary, North Carolina, which Cary is right outside Raleigh. No one knows where Cary is unless you're in North Carolina.
And you're one of those liberty people, right?
I like to think of myself as such, yes.
Do you think that heroin should be legal and available in vending machines as long as the vending machines are privately owned and operated?
We're starting off with that, are we?
Absolutely. Hey, Fox News started off with it when they put Ron Paul on and tried to knock him out of the race.
Okay, well, ultimately, yes. I think that there's probably an in-between there somewhere.
So Jeffrey Tucker wrote an article recently about brutalist libertarianism versus, what was the other term?
Humanitarian.
Yeah. And see, it caused a lot of fuss. And of course, I didn't read it. I don't have time to read it. I like Jeffrey Tucker. I think he's a good guy. I don't need to read it. I'm too busy making my own media and building my own roads. And I do have the domain jeffreytucker.bit, which I'm offering to him free for 6 months, and it includes walking him or his web person through how to set up a .bit site and what to do with it. And like all the other ones that I've cyber squatted that I'm offering for free to all the liberty people, like StefanMolyneux.bit, FreeTalkLive.bit. Actually, FreeTalkLive's taken me up on it. But yeah, it's gonna after 6 months, it's gonna go up one Bitcoin every 6 months. So you can get it free now, Jeffrey Tucker. But so first of all, people are saying, like, where did he come up with this idea for the comparing brutalist architecture to libertarianism? The Freedom Fiends did an episode. When was it? It was in 2012, in June of 2012, and it was called All Drugs Will Cost 6 cents a Dose in LibPair or something like that. And we talked about brutalist architecture, but we were comparing it to the state, because brutalist architecture is that type of architecture that a lot of FBI buildings and government buildings have that just look like you walk up the steps of the building and it's so oppressively designed that you just like hang your head and basically go, you submit. That's what they're designed to do. So, but what was the controversy? Who got upset?
I think that the people that got upset were those that Jeffrey Tucker would probably describe as brutalists. But I think it was more the terminology that he used. A lot of what I read, it seemed to come more from people that didn't quite understand that he was drawing a parallel between that type of architecture that you're referring to and that form of libertarianism.
I found the Freedom Fiends episode. It's from June 2012. The date was June 1st, 2012. And the title of the episode is Weed is a Gateway Drug to Being President. And we had an extended discussion about brutalist architecture in there. So that's probably what put it in his head. I'm not saying he stole from us, but people are saying, like, where did he get this idea? Probably from hearing the Fiends and not knowing it, or someone else who heard the Fiends mention it. So there's a term called I call it macho libertarian flash, but the original term was like macho flash libertarianism or something like that. And it's from the 70s, and it's something that some libertarian party person wrote an article. This is before the internet. It was like published in a newsletter, and they basically said that people have to have, you know, that if we want to make a change and get people elected, which was the goal back then, you know, we have to like avoid macho, flashy libertarianism, you know, basically. Now, that person confused one thing with another. Like, I instantly go to the most adamant out there thought. Like, if someone wants to talk about decriminalizing pot, I'm like, I'm all for it, but why not legalize heroin and sell it in vending machines?
Right.
So there's a couple reasons for that. One is it gets their attention. The other is it's kind of almost bargaining. It's like, you know, I want the world, but, you know, I'd settle for a more free world, I guess. Or not right. settle for, yeah. but, you know, it'd be nice. But, and then the critique from a lot of kind of like, I wouldn't say bow tie libertarians, but a lot of, you know, kind of like academic libertarians is that you're scaring people off. And I don't really care. I don't do anything unethical. I don't harm anyone. And I don't have to like, I don't have to be centrist and dumb down my ideas or compromise them to appeal to the masses. I'm not about appealing to the masses. So I've always gone for the most extreme form of it. Now, what they were talking about in this 1970s article about macho libertarian flash, Libertarian Party, was something else, which was kind of that combined with, you know, when asked about, well, what do you think about welfare? You know, saying like, well, all little kids should starve. You know, it's their parents' fault. Like, that's not where I go with it.
Right.
And I think you can take things to the extreme of course it should be legal without sounding brutal or without being mean. Now, I think I sound a little brutal sometimes when I say things like that. But there's people who say things like that, like Stefan Molyneux would absolutely say, if you asked him, that, you know, heroin should be freely available and legal in vending machines as long as they're privately owned and operated and not taxed. Mm-hmm. But and there's nothing about him that comes off as, you know, mean. And he's a very cultured guy. But I don't understand what the big fuss is about. I mean, I saw people on my Twitter feed like reacting, not violently, but, you know, at Jeffrey Tucker.
Reacting violently toward Jeffrey Tucker
toward his writing in that article.
Yeah, that's true. They did.
And I didn't read it. And of course I'm discussing it because that's how I work, but I don't have time. Okay.
And you got the gist.
Did you read it?
I did read it.
Okay. Give me the gist of it in a little more detail.
Well, let's see. I mean, you know, basically what he was saying is that, you know, brutalist libertarians are, you know, really just in your face, just like the architecture that we're talking about. You don't have any, you know, there's no gray areas where they're concerned. You know exactly where they stand. And if they have thoughts that aren't necessarily politically correct, you know, they're going to say it. So if, you know, I mean, and especially according to Jeffrey Tucker, that if they're racist or sexist, or, you know, want to, you know, just kind of, you know, reject social norms and that type of thing, then they're going to be out there with it. And I, you know, I definitely, you know, according to this article, I'd say that he disagrees with that approach. that it is, you know, I think it can be scary to people to, you know, to have it come at them like that.
Well, he has a whole presentation that's, you know, I don't know if it's an affectation or like if he came out of the womb like this, but he's kind of like, you know, the James Bond of liberty meets the most interesting man in the world. You know, he's always got a martini. He kind of like, I picture him having his thumb up while he's drinking his martini, you know, which isn't a bad thing. There's room for all kinds of things, but he strikes me as someone who wears his refinement like a badge of honor. Whereas, you know, I mean, a lot of people in Liberty don't know me because they haven't met me in person. I kind of like walk around with really, I dress like a, you know, 55-year-old single lesbian. You know, I wear stretch pants. I burp a lot. I scratch my belly. I really don't care if I look unrefined to people because I know in my heart of hearts and my brain of brains that I am. But I'm kind of the antithesis of Jeffrey Tucker in person.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
sorry.
It's okay. I know you did that on purpose. So, I mean,
I didn't. I had to burp, but I was going to, normally I would mute the mic, but I didn't on purpose. It was a real burp.
That's cool.
I'm pounding coffee, man.
I'm pounding a sparkling water, actually.
Whee! Yay. All right. So Jeffrey Tucker.
I haven't actually gotten to meet him personally, but I did see him at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. And yeah, I mean, he's...
I don't meet people you have to line up to meet. Ever.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wasn't like that there. It really wasn't. I mean, people were just kind of hanging out, and you could just go right up to them and say, "Hi, I'm Diana." And, you know, everybody was very friendly, very nice, very cool. I mean, I met, you know, you talked about having rock stars on the show. I met those rock stars. You know, I met some of them. I met others of them in Las Vegas. And, yeah, so, I mean, I didn't actually get to meet him, but it, you know, I wasn't, you know, really trying to either. But, yeah, he looks really clean.
Yeah. Even though he has whiskey for breakfast and wrote a book about it.
Was that him?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
I know. I don't drink.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I
get brutal when I drink. So I haven't drank in about 20 years, but.
Yeah. 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 Same here.
Really? You get brutal when you drink?
I got all kinds of things when I drank.
Yeah. All right. So tell me more about how you personally like to approach people in a discussion. You're not very brutalist about it, huh?
Not yet. You know, I'm still kind of, and when I say not yet, it's just because I don't really know. I'm still in that growth phase. I'm still kind of like in that baby crawling phase of learning, you know, what does this all mean to me? And what does this all mean for my life? And how do I articulate all these, you know, blossoming ideas and you know, the way that I really feel like I'm waking up, you know, I wouldn't say for the first time in my life, but for, you know, again, I'm waking up again, and I'm continuing to wake up more and more. And it's all very emotional. So it's very hard to articulate it in a way that I can make other people understand what I'm trying to say or what I'm trying to get across to them. So I have kind of all these ideas floating around, but trying to get them out is a whole other thing.
Well, cool. We're going to take a little trip to the free market, and then we come back and talk with Diana more about trying to find our place in the world and wondering why we're here and what to do about it in a Liberty perspective on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now. Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yes. Michael Dean After Dark. Libertarian brutalism since 2014. So, yeah. I'm reading this article about criticizing libertarian brutalism, this article by Jeffrey Tucker, and I really think that it is confusing one thing with another. I think it's basically saying that if you're a libertarian and you have an ego, he's lumping you in with racists and saying, it seems like he's saying everyone should be really polite and wear a bow tie and hold their pinky up while talking to the world. I don't know, man. It's not for me. What do you think, Diana?
Where do you get that he's confusing having an ego and being a libertarian with being racist?
You're going to make me get back up? I'm across the room. I freely flow, man. Everybody's read this article by now, and I just read most of it in the break. So,
right. I don't know. You're a fast reader.
Yeah, yeah. What did you think of it?
Again, you know, I mean, I say again, I might have said this during the break, but I have an open mind about it. I mean, I can definitely see where people would take offense at it. I mean, there's, you know,
a lot of people did.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But I think that I don't know. I mean,
well, if Jeffrey Tucker's listening and would like to call in, he can call in at 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. And that's if you're listening live on March 19th, about midnight 25 in Central Time. The number again is 1-855-660-4261. So, yeah, let's not talk too much about this article. Let's talk more about our own feelings about it. How do you approach friends who aren't yet libertarian or ANCAP when you talk to them and they have questions?
It depends on the friend. I have friends that are very, very opinionated and are very, you know, pretty strong in their viewpoints. And so I'm a little more tentative when I approach them. And then I have other friends that are really open to hearing about it. And, you know, I have one friend that I've been, you know, very excited talking about Bitcoin with him. And, you know, he's even gone so far as to send me articles that he's found about, you know, different establishments accepting Bitcoin. There's actually a bakery nearby in Durham that's now accepting Bitcoin. And so it's all very exciting. And so I talked to him about that, and he's totally cool. And but then other people I talk to, you know, they're, you know, they might want to hear it, but they might be argumentative about it. And so I don't necessarily back down, but at the same time, I don't try to, I guess, force my views. I'm of the mindset that it's better to walk the talk as much as I possibly can, and perhaps, you know, more attract than promote.
Yeah, I think that, and those are like alcohol recovery terms, and I think that the approach that people take that works in getting people sober who want to be sober works with statism, getting people sober from statism. And I do think there's a big, a lot of parallels between addiction and statism, because it's doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. It's depending on something to try to fix you instead of trying to fix yourself. And it is completely destructive to you and everyone around you. And people are in denial about that. So yeah, I don't stand on a street corner with a bullhorn and tell people that they should, you know, run their own lives instead of electing people to run their lives in mine, any more than I would have stood on the street corner in early, you know, at any point in recovery and told outside a bar and told people to stop drinking. Yeah, they have to want to change. And you know, a lot of times people will come to you with a few questions, and I'm not the best person for the initial contact for someone who's curious about liberty, because I will open with, you know, the heroin vending machines and they'll say, but,
yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like,
but I'm good for the second or third contact after they've embraced the possibility of, you know, after they embrace the possibility of decriminalizing and taxing marijuana, they can come to me and I'll tell them why they should even just legalize all drugs and sell them freely without anything and no taxes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You are actually probably one of my first experiences with, Liberty Talk Radio on Freedom Fiends. And I wasn't scared away.
Well, your boyfriend turned you on to us, right?
More or less.
And you trust him, you know, if you just, I mean, I wonder about people who are just flipping the channel and like, we're literally on after Rush Limbaugh and before the Cowboy Church on some stations. So,
oh really?
Yeah. We'll be back after this.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Michael Dean After Dark. We're talking about Jeffrey Tucker condemning brutalist libertarians. And let me read a couple paragraphs from this article, because, you know, we're kind of talking about this as if everyone's read it, and not everyone has. But he says, the humanitarians are drawn to reasons such as the following. Liberty allows peaceful human cooperation. I'm not making fun of it. I'm just talking quietly because my wife's asleep. It inspires the creative service of others. It keeps violence at bay. It allows for capital formation and prosperity. It protects human rights against all invasion. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm not going to read all this because we don't have time. Then he says, but then there are the reasons. These are not the only reasons people support liberty. There is a segment of the population of self-described libertarians, described here as brutalists by him, who find all the above rather boring, broad, and excessively humanitarian. To them, what's impressive about liberty is it allows people to assert their individual preferences, to form homogeneous tribes, to work out their biases in action, to ostracize people based on politically incorrect standards, to hate to their heart's content so long as no violence is used as a means, to shout down people based on their demographic or political opinions, to be openly racist or sexist, to exclude or isolate and be generally malcontented with modernity, and to reject civil standards and values of etiquette in favor of antisocial norms. See, some of the stuff he's saying in here is really, really oppressive and a turnoff to most people. And some of it is just like, what's wrong with, you know, asserting your individuality? I mean, I think he does. He wears a bow tie, man. He wears a bow tie. You know, I've never seen him in a t-shirt. You know, he's the professor of liberty, you know? So he's asserting his individuality.
Yeah, well, I mean, I can see your point. It's not like he's saying that it allows people to assert their individual preferences or to form homogenous tribes or, you know, it does kind of sound like he's lumping.
What is the Free State Project but a homogenous tribe? What is,
yeah, it kind of, you know, is.
And it's under one banner. A lot of them are brutally individualistic. You know, I mean, Derek Jay, the other bowtie libertarian who's one of the co-hosts on this show, he is extremely individualist to the point of like, look at me, is part of his activism. Right. And I dig it, you know, and that's why I wanted him on here. Right. What is, you know, the Texas Bitcoin convention where Tucker was a speaker, you know, other than a group of people homogenized in one temporary tribe under one thing, you know, like not even everyone there is a libertarian. It's just people who are into Bitcoin. So I don't buy this, man. I really don't.
Yeah. And I haven't read his response to people's response to this. So I don't know, you know, if he tempered any of this at all.
And I don't have time for that because if he didn't write it clearly enough, I don't want to see the back treading, you know? And then if he's, what is his reply to this? It's either, I didn't mean what you think I meant, which means he should have written it more clearly. And he's a very intelligent guy. It reads clearly to me as what I think I'm interpreting it as. Or, you know, he's saying I stand by it, in which case, why read it? I already read the first article.
Right. Yeah. You know, I haven't, so far in my experiences, I haven't met anyone that fits some of these descriptions. I mean, I definitely think that there is the homogenous tribe thing for sure. There's the individual preferences. I met a lot of quirky people when I was in New Hampshire, and I love that. I mean, I love like people just being who they are, and you know, not you know, trying to hide that. I mean, I love that. I mean, that's something that I'm very attracted to. But I didn't meet anyone that was hateful or vile. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, no violence, but I didn't meet anyone that was into shouting people down or racist or sexist or any of those things. I haven't met anyone like that. So I'm wondering who he has met that are like that.
I don't know, man. I really don't know. I've met some hardcore Christian libertarians who, like Boston Tea Party, for instance, is basically, you know, somebody asked him, how would you feel about a gay couple moving to Wyoming and joining Free State Wyoming, which is a spinoff of the New Hampshire group. And he basically said, as long as they weren't overt about it, I'd have no problem with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are not a lot of people of color in Free State Wyoming, but there is one. Right. There's a black guy, and he's welcomed. I mean, I'm laughing because it's like, yeah, they got a black guy, but you know, it's Wyoming. There aren't a lot of black people here, so
Yeah, that's interesting because I heard something similar about the group in Asheville. And it's basically a liberty community that's right outside of Asheville. And I think that you might have talked to
Johnson. Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys might have mentioned that group. And what I've heard, and this is just hearsay, I haven't, you know, read a lot about it, but that they are kind of anti-Christian. So that if you happen to be a Christian libertarian, that, oh, it's okay if you come here, just don't be overt about it.
Well, I can see that too. And it's like, if you feel really strongly about anything, why not build your own community around it? I mean, mm-hmm. like, you know, I think that's part of the problem of law protected equality is that people are forced to be with people they don't want to be with, and people are hired to fill a quota over people who are more qualified.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, what's wrong with, you know, a bunch of like Irishmen getting together who like Irish culture? Like, I'm Irish a little bit, and I don't have any sense of Irish ethnicity or anything. I don't have an ounce of Irish pride, but what's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with a bunch of black people? Like, what should the NAACP, you know, also help white people get into college? I mean, why can't you start, you know, if you're a Christian, do you want an atheist coming to your church and screaming about atheism during your sermon? Why should you have to allow people that strongly disagree with you? Basically, people freely associate on ideas that attract them. And, mm-hmm. you know, AA is a good example of that. Like, AA's primary purpose is to help the alcoholic. And when it worked and then drug addicts started coming in the 50s or the 40s, you know, they were like, hey, take our 12 steps and go elsewhere and start NA because mm-hmm. they didn't want to hear about it. And mm-hmm. if AA tried to solve every problem everyone had, they would dissolve because they wouldn't be able to deal with their primary purpose. So it sounds to me like Tucker is in favor of homogenizing humanity, which I'm not really into.
No. Yeah. Me either. I'm definitely not into that.
You know, I don't like jazz music much. And if I sit around listening to rock music in my home, I don't want someone to feel they have the right to walk in and say, put on some Dave Brubeck right now, because I'm not being represented in your house, you know?
Right. Speaking of which, that music that you were playing made me fist pump.
Oh, the music in the show?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my band Bomb, that last bit.
Yeah, yeah, I've listened to a few of the songs.
There's a song called All My References Are Dead, and I wrote it after, like, basically it was literally like several of the people who I would use for references for jobs and apartments, like, all died of drug overdoses or were shot by the police in a couple of years. And I was going to fill out a job application, and I said out loud to myself, huh, you know, references. I said, I mumbled to myself, all my references are dead. And then I just thought it'd be a great name for a song.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jeffrey Tucker, here's what I think. I think that liberty is large enough that it doesn't have to be homogenized, and it can exist with Jeffrey Tucker making fun of my kind of libertarianism, and it can all still stand. And I still like him, and I still want to give him his .bit domain and help him for free, for the next 5 months and 2 weeks, I think it's at now.
Right. And, you know, and kind of the way I look at it, too, is that, you know, he is expressing an opinion and he certainly has a right to that. But he also does not have – he doesn't have the right, though, to not face criticism for it.
Yeah.
Know? I mean, so, you know, he put his ideas out there. He put his opinion out there. And you know, he had the fortitude to do that. And I respect him for that. And, but yeah, I mean, everybody else has a right to criticize what he had to say too.
You know, I got to say that I have now read this article during this show in the breaks, but I basically had an opinion against it before I read it. Based on someone I really respect not liking it. It was this lady named Comrade, who goes by Comrade Keaton on Twitter. And she's a adamant feminist. And I don't usually hang out with people that call themselves adamant feminists because they're usually so, you know, like adamantly in your face about it. But she's not. She's really cool. Mm-hmm. And she's part of Anti-War Radio. Mm-hmm. And she tweeted – the first I heard this article was like her tweeting, you know, Jeffrey Tucker says doesn't like brutalists. I say no thanks, Jeffrey Tucker, or something like that. And I was like, wow, okay. I don't like the article and I haven't read it. But, you know, I trust her opinion and for the most mm-hmm. – on most things. And I read it and I don't like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
So this is your first time on radio, huh?
It is.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
And we literally are on radio. We were on no channels. I mean, I think there's probably some pirate radio stations that play stuff that I don't have any control over or even know who they are. But we are on a Part 15 radio station as of last night called Lakeshore Radio in Rowlett, Texas. Part 15 is like almost like legal pirate radio. It's it's broadcasting without a license on 100 milliwatts or less. And generally... Oh, wow. You know, generally I call that like the most powerful station in the tri-yard area because that's about how far it reaches. But there's ways to do it, and this guy does it legally to the max. Like, you know, has his antenna way up high, has it the right length, the right height, everything tuned the right way. And he reaches like a mile and a half or 2 miles radius. And that's in a suburb of Dallas that's really populated. So he's reaching a potential audience of like, you know, 8,000, 10,000 people, and he streams on the internet. Like basically when you search Part 15 radio, Lakeshore Radio is the first or second thing that comes up. Like it's the premier, you know, it's the biggest tiny radio station in the country. And we're on that, not live, delayed by like 23 hours or 22 hours, but yeah. Oh. And I want to welcome them. And so yeah. I didn't tell you that till we'd been on a while. Cause I
That's okay.
didn't want to make you nervous.
That's all right.
Are you still nervous? Picture everyone naked.
It's okay. No, I'm actually not nervous. I mean, it is like we're just having a conversation and, you know, and I mean, I possibly have friends listening, but I don't know. And it's okay because they're my friends.
At least they are now.
Hopefully they'll still be my friends after the broadcast. Yeah.
You can blame it on me. Well, you know, I always say that the most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. And that's pretty much what radio is, even if there's only one co-host. It's like the host or one host. It's the host speaking to the one person listening, even if there's a million people listening. And I walk around my room and sit in different chairs and lie down on the bed and lie down on the floor. And I rock it, man. We'll be back. I'm Michael Dean After Dark. This is more bomb music.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun here on Michael Dean After Dark. The real fun is in the breaks. Y'all don't get to hear it. We come back giggling. Diana just sent me a picture of her on a selfie of her on the radio. And I said she looked 12 and she looked about 4'6". And she said she's older than that and taller than that.
A little bit older than that.
Yeah. So tell me about yoga. You do yoga.
Okay. Yoga.
Isn't that the devil's bendings? Bendy, the devil's bendies?
The devil's bendies, yeah. I, you know, a lot of Christians won't practice yoga, and most Christians I personally associate with will, and don't have an issue with it. But
and you're Christian.
I'm Christian, yes, and
so you know, is your boyfriend, right?
Nope.
But his name's Christian. Is his name Christian?
His name is Christian.
Yeah, I'm making a joke. Okay.
But he, or not he, but yeah, I mean, so yoga has a lot of spiritual aspects to it. But for me, it's very much in line with any kind of spiritual practice I've ever done. I mean, there's nothing that negates it or that's contradictory to it. And it really, it so far, you know, because I've had to as part, I'm training to become a teacher. And so as part of my teacher training, I have to do homework. And so every day I have to do some sort of practice. And some of that practice involves, meditation and breathing and a lot of the things that I've been reading about it, which I've had to do a lot of reading as well, is, you know, there's this huge non-harming principle around yoga, and obviously that's very much in line with libertarian principles, at least the ones I adhere to. And so, you know, it's like it just kind of feels like everything's sort of coming together. You know, it's like the yoga thing and the libertarian thing, and you know, so it's all good.
Nice. What kind of yoga do you do?
The type of yoga that I'm learning right now, it's called Hatha yoga, and Hatha is two Sanskrit words, ha, which is sun, and tha, which is moon. So it's kind of like it means that it's a balanced kind of thing. And, but in the process of learning this type of yoga, I'm also learning, other, kind of styles of yoga. Some of these words, some of these Sanskrit words I have a hard time with. there's like what a lot of people call flow yoga, where you just kind of flow from one pose to another. And a lot of people think, oh, it's just stretching. You're not really getting a good workout. I get an awesome workout.
I think that's in Los Angeles and sometimes in San Francisco, but especially in LA, I would often see Japanese people. I don't know if they're Japanese American or Japanese nationals, but in parks in the morning in groups doing that kind of stuff.
They're doing Tai Chi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a thing. Yeah.
People do that in parks.
Yep, that's a thing. And yeah, people do yoga in parks. People do yoga on the beach, and yeah, I mean it's very I don't know. I always just feel so awesome when I've done a yoga class, and I'm excited to be a teacher. That was one of the I don't know how much more time we have in this segment, but one of the things that I took from the Passport to Freedom that I went to in Las Vegas was, you know, and we can, you know, if you want to, we can talk about that a little bit. But they talked about, you know, learn a skill. And I have skills. I mean, I have a job, you know, but what kind of skill is portable? You know, what can I take with me anywhere?
And I think that's important for libertarians to be self-sufficient, which is another thing that goes back to AA. Is like AA is self-sufficient through its own contributions. It does. That's because, you know, alcoholics, when they were drinking, were so used to bumming off of people that they want to show that they're not like that anymore. And I think that's really important with libertarianism, because we are espousing something that's largely based on an economy, on economic ideas as well as philosophical and non-harm ideas. But, you know, it doesn't look that convincing, you know, you said live by example and teach by example. It doesn't look that good if you're talking about, oh, the economy would be great if it was just free economy and everyone got out of the way, when the person can't support themselves. So I like that a lot more people are becoming self-sufficient and learning skills. And I also like what Bitcoin has done, because a lot of the early adopters of Bitcoin who bought a lot of it cheap were libertarian. And I know there are some libertarian millionaires out there. And if they're listening, make a donation to Michael
Dean
After Dark, or especially Meowbit, because we literally are building the roads.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
The state experimentado.
The United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Estos por su parte consideran
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Math Worms. This is Michael Dean, and it's After Dark. It's time for hour two of Michael Dean After Dark. And I guess it's time to put on my therapist hat, so I should go take the mic off the stand and walk over and lie down on the couch and therapize myself. So we're going to talk about my book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, which you can get by going to either Amazon and searching User's Manual for the Human Experience, or you can go to my site for this radio show, michaelwdean.com, and click on Michael's Stuff. It's one of the links. And then about the third link down is User's Manual for the Human Experience. You can get it as a paperback on Amazon for a little bit of money, or you can get it free as an ebook or as an audiobook with me mumbling it into a microphone. So, Diana, you've read most of it, half of it, right?
Yeah, it's really good.
What? Okay, thank you. What's good about it? Like, pretend I didn't write it. Pretend I'm your friend and you're telling me about it and I'm like skeptical. I don't know, man. I'm reading the new Harry Potter annotations.
You should absolutely read this book because it...
I'm reading the novelization of Caddyshack. I don't have time for a self-help book.
That's funny.
There's no such thing, but go on.
You're going to get me going laughing and I'm not going to be able to stop.
Go ahead, man. That's good radio for a while.
For a while. Until I start crying.
Yeah, man.
One of the things that really struck me about this book is...
I'm literally lying down now. That's supposed to be bad radio, cool. But I think for late night radio, it's kind of good to be relaxed. So go ahead.
Yeah, you sound real good. Yeah. What was your part, the part that you wrote about math worms, which...
Did I use that term?
You did use that term.
It's so funny because my wife and I invented a whole bunch of terminology in that book, which is – we did it because it was fun and because it made sense. You know, like, mm-hmm. we called people serenity vampires.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm.
And – but I've had people – like use the terms back to me and it's, uh-huh. and it sounds like – what? Are you in a cult? What are these inside terms you're using? Oh, wait. Me and my wife made them up. I forgot.
Right. Yeah. And
it's been so long.
Yeah, the math worms basically that kind of like encompasses the serenity vampires, the weenies, and the soul mosquitoes.
Yeah, there you go. I forgot.
Which I'm healthy enough today that I generally don't hang out with serenity vampires, but I still to some degree have weenies and mosquitoes in my life, and they do require math. And you call it, you say mental calculations you have to do to deal with them. That's why they're called math worms. I call it mental gymnastics. It's like, oh, you know, I got to watch what I say. I got to watch what I do. You know, what are they going to be like today? What kind of mood are they going to be in? You know, like just people that I feel like I have to walk on eggshells around.
Yeah.
And
you know, then there's people that like don't really do that to you, but they're really into weird math in a weird way. Like, I kind of feel like that article by Jeffrey Tucker, and I'm not calling him – he's no kind of math worm or anything. But I think it's kind of like arguing how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, which is some – it's a saying, but it's based on like Christian philosophers actually, you know, 400 years ago had a 100-year discussion of how many angels could fit on the head of a pin. And – it's kind of like I don't want to spend my life discussing the intricacies of academic libertarianism. And this is not macho libertarian flash. It's fact. I am far more interested in hearing about Popcorn Sutton, the bootlegger from North Carolina, who spent his, you know, for kicks, he would go down and blatantly break the law by selling corn liquor in front of the voting place, which is violating four or five laws. You know, that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very much macho libertarianism, macho libertarian flash. And that guy may not have even known the word libertarian, but he totally lived it and breathed it. You know, I'm more interested in people who live and breathe something than people who study things in an academic way. And there's room for all of it. And it's like Jeffrey Tucker and Stefan Molyneux are the professors at the Liberty University, like figuratively and literally they are professors or have been at a Liberty University, or Jeffrey Tucker has been. And, you know, Nima Vedati, who I do the Freedom Feeds with, and I are more like the Beavis and Butthead of Liberty cracking up in the back of the professor's class making fun of him, you know. And the college experience requires both kinds of people, so there.
I agree. There's room for all of us in this world.
Yeah.
So it's kind of funny that you mentioned that he taught at the Liberty University. There is actually a Liberty University, I'm sure you're well aware.
Yeah, it's the Lou Rockwell runs it, doesn't he? It's
in Alabama. No, it's not called Liberty University. There's a Liberty University that is a hardcore Christian university.
I think Jeffrey Tucker was involved with the Mises Institute.
Mises Institute.
I think he's not anymore. You know, there's a lot of people that used to be involved with the Mises Institute and Lou Rockwell who aren't anymore. I don't know what that means, but
yeah, I don't either.
Bill Buport used to write for Lou Rockwell and, you know, he kind of became famous in libertarian circles for that. And when you ask him, like, oh, are you still writing for Lou Rockwell? He's like, no. And you're like, why not? And he's like, I'm just not. Let's not talk about it.
I've heard your talks with Bill Buport, and I met him at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum.
He's sexy.
Okay.
I'm just saying that because
he's very nice, and his wife is very nice as well.
I'm not hitting on him,
but he gave a great talk. And when I heard him, I actually was going to see Ben Swan, and Ben and his
Ben, who was an hour late to our to be interviewed on my show the other day.
He was
Ben Swan
on this show.
No, on Freedom Fiends, and we made fun of him about it on the air and during his interview, only because his guy contacted us, like, will you please interview him? He's raising money. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's Ben Swan. Absolutely. And we booked it like a month in advance. I did like weekly follow-ups confirming it. And he just forgot about it. And so, so when I got him on, I said, you know, he came in on the second hour and he stayed for the whole second hour. And I was like, well, you're late, so I'm going to talk about me and my projects on your interview for the first 5 minutes. And he was a really good sport about it.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I was actually going to see him. I think that his flight was canceled or something like that. I mean, I think there was a really good reason why he wasn't there.
There was no really good reason why he wasn't there on my show, which is why I razzed him.
Let's hope it's not a pattern. But Bill Buport spoke instead. And so I got to hear a lot of, you know, his views and everything, which I found to be very interesting. And I, you know, purposefully went up and spoke with him afterwards, because of one of his viewpoints, which you don't hear a lot of people in the liberty community talk very much about. And I don't know if he would be okay with me talking about it. I guess he said it in front of 100 people. So, he was talking about abortion. And
he's like the only anti-abortion atheist in the world, probably, or one of them.
Yeah, well, yeah, he's one of them, and I'm against abortion. You know, I don't believe in government involvement in it whatsoever, but I'm personally against it. And
you can talk about Bill's view on abortion. He's talked about it on radio before.
Okay. Yeah. And so I was so excited to hear him say, like, come right out and say that he was, you know, pro-life, that I had to go talk to him, you know, and ask him, you know, what does that mean for him? What does that mean to be a libertarian and be pro-life? And I didn't get a chance to talk to him as much as I would have liked to, but I was really impressed with that. And then also his experience with Dobby Barker in the
Bitcoin,
the
TSA.
Yeah, Oh my gosh, that was crazy.
Yeah. Davi's also a co-host on this show. He hasn't been on yet, but man.
I met him too. Yeah, he did a, you know, they have, and this is my first experience with, I mean, I've had so many first experiences in this last year. It's crazy. that going to the New Hampshire Liberty Forum, that they have the this whole alt expo. Do you know what that is?
It's like the where people they have, who aren't big rock stars like Jeffrey Tucker and don't do the main stage. Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Like they,
it's like it's where they'd put me if I went to there.
Well, well, but the thing about it is they didn't really have them anywhere. They had them in hotel rooms, which was the strangest thing to me. And
did people get naked?
No, but people were laying around in beds and stuff, and I didn't know what to do or where to sit or anything.
That's kind of how this show is.
I was like, where do I, this is a hotel room. Seriously? Like, I didn't know where to go or whatever. And, but I mean, I made myself comfortable and got to hear, gosh, I can't remember his name and I feel bad about it, but he was talking about, libertarianism in fiction or science fiction.
So Taran Lupo?
No. What was his name, Chris?
Scott Beezer?
No. He's got like, he kind of almost looks like Gene Simmons from Kiss without the makeup. but Davi was in there, and also he taught. I listened to one of Davi's talks, which he talked about in the main forum, but also talked about in the Alt Expo about an experiment that he's working on. Has he mentioned that? Yeah, maybe I shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah, if it wasn't public, if it was behind closed doors, maybe not. So
yeah.
I think I hijacked a discussion of my book. See, that's why, like, I literally make a living selling books. But one of the reasons I'm not a bestseller is because this is what I do. Like, I get on someone else's radio show to talk about my book and end up hijacking the conversation.
Well, you're a tangential thinker, like I am.
Conocentric parenthetical hypertextual conversations, you know, and that's a rule of radio and of storytelling, is that it doesn't matter how many rabbit holes you go down. If you come back to the main point, the whole thing works as a piece. So,
especially if you can tie it together somehow.
Yeah, but I can't. So I'll just have to jump back. You know, it's more like I'm clicking on the back link on the webpage. So my book, The User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Okay. All right. The other thing that I really liked, I loved the whole Mathworms idea because, Mathworms. You know, I
mean, that'd be a good name for a band. The Mathworms. For like a geeky synth pop band or something.
Right. was talking about integrity and having integrity. And there was one part in the book, and it was kind of more toward where I left off, maybe chapter 9 or 10, where you talk about having integrity no matter who you deal with.
Yeah.
Like even if you're dealing with someone who's difficult to deal with, have integrity with them. You know, and what it reminded me of was how I taught my daughter to deal with people when she was young. And
how was that? How'd you teach her? What'd you teach her?
Well, it was, I tried to live my teaching, but it was more kind of like, this is how you should do it. And she got it. I mean, I'm amazed at how incredible she is as an adult woman, but I taught her to have her.
We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
All right. Hold your kitty cats tight. Count your name coin. And prepare for more Michael Dean After Dark. We got Diana. So, Diana, we're going to not, I'm not going to hijack my own interview about my own book. Go ahead and ask questions or tell me thoughts about it. Tell me about my great book.
Okay, your great book. You're great. The reason why your book is so great is because it just kind of expresses all the thoughts that I've ever had personally.
Well, that's what people like in media is things that agree with them and say it more cogently than they've had time to write it down.
Right, and you've come up with some really nifty names for
my wife. My wife helps name things. My wife's really good at helping name things. She came up with Meow Bit too.
Oh, cool. I love that.
I wanted to call it Catbit, but catbit.com was taken. And I just turned to her. She was at her computer next to me. And I told her that. And she's like, how about Meowbit? I checked it. It was not taken. So that was the name.
Yeah. Meowbit. I love that. I'm big with cats, as you know.
I came up with the name Free Speech Me, but that took about 2 hours of back and forth with the creator of that program, just throwing things back and forth until we got that.
Right. Yeah. Meowbit.
Meowbit.
Meowbit. So,
Meowbit. That'd be a good name for a cat, Meowbits. And Meowbits, Meowbit would be a good name for a cat. Meowbits would be a good name for cat food. But we're going to talk about my book, A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Okay. So I was talking about my daughter and raising my daughter. And what I did was I taught her that when she had to deal with, you know, bullies, which all kids when they're, you know, or most kids anyway, when they're in school, elementary school, middle school especially, they have to deal with kids that are, you know, mean to them. And her name's Caitlin. What I taught her was that, basically tell them to get out of your life or leave you alone, but do it in a respectful way. You know, if they're not treating you well, you know, go hang out with people who do treat you well, but do it respectfully. You know, don't, you know, if they're abusing you in some way, don't necessarily abuse them back unless they're being physically abusive, you know? And so it's just like, I wanted her to be respectful of people no matter what, you know, even if they didn't deserve it, you know? And, that was so that she could hold her head high and know that she did the right thing and kept her side of the street clean. So that's one of the things I really liked about
and integrity. I go even further into it in the book of like that it's okay to do with your family if they're just really, really toxic. You know, Stefan Molyneux is into that too. And I wrote this book before I ever heard of him. And I think before he was ever talking about it, I don't think he got it from me. I think we both came. I think great minds think alike. But he actually has a kind of culty sounding term too. It's defoo, which means and then foo is family of origin. So defooing is leaving your family of origin.
Yeah. And I've had moments of wanting to do that way in the past.
Well, do it. Call him right now? Call him up and have him call in on the radio.
I really don't want to.
Kidding.
I love my family. Yeah. I mean, I get along. You know, a lot of my problems with my family of origin had more to do with me and my behavior than them. So, And so, and of course, I've had to learn how to set really good boundaries and that kind of thing. And I've done so, and my relationship with them has improved as a result. So
nice.
Yeah. I love my family. They're cool. My mom died back in 2003. And, I never really had the chance to do that with her. But I've definitely done that with my dad and that part of my family. So. Are we done therapizing?
We could get off the particular. Let's go back to the general of the book. What else did you get out of it?
Sounds good. I really like boiling things down to the two rules. Like I really that was probably my favorite thing, because you know practically any spiritual principle that you look at, no matter what faith you're looking at, you know, ideology or whatever, kind of boils down to those two things.
I feel like anything that can't be anything in the world that can't be summed up with two or three paragraphs or less is too far reaching of a project and should be broken into smaller things. And the golden rule and don't initiate, don't initiate aggression and don't accept aggression and keep your word.
Right. Yeah. So those are the two rules in your book. Don't initiate or accept aggression.
Yeah. I basically took the,
well, I mean,
I took the non-aggression principle and added or accept. And, you know, there are variations on that. I mean, that does not mean, you know, shoot the mailman or the tax man. It basically means don't accept aggression that you don't need to, that's easier to step away from than it is to fight, you know?
Right,
and with
absolutely.
People, that's often the case. We'll be back with the final segment of Michael Dean After Dark with Diana after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address in our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
That's the clearing of the voice before the clearing of the mind. I'm Michael Dean After Dark, and this is Michael Dean, and it is definitely, indubitably After Dark. So we're talking about all sorts of things on the last segment, and then we're talking about bunny rabbits. Tell me really quick about your bunny.
Her name is Bella, and I adopted her from a friend of mine's niece who was going away to college, and I wanted another pet because all I had was my cat, and I really wanted a dog, but everybody said I shouldn't get a dog because I'm always gone, and so I adopted this rabbit, and she's really sweet. She's kind of wild. Like I wonder sometimes if she wasn't really a wild rabbit that somebody just caught and kept.
We're going to take a call here in a sec. I just want to say the caller has been on hold for 5 minutes. I didn't want him to think we forgot about him, but
okay.
Yeah, I have a cat that's soft like a bunny. I also rabbit sat for a friend one time who was out of town. I left the rabbit out in his apartment, and I didn't know you weren't supposed to do that. And it ate everything. It chewed through every cable, every speaker cable, every light cable. It shredded them all. Fortunately, the guy was an electrician, so he was able to fix them all. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We're going to talk to Phil in Hollywood, California. Hollywood. I have been to Hollywood. I used to live in Echo Park. And put him on the air. Let's get him on here. Are you there, sir?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey. I used to live in Echo Park. That's near Hollywood.
It is. I know. I lived in Hollywood for 12 years, and I live downtown, and it's amazing. It's not as scary as it used to be, but just on the edge of scary, which is why I moved here.
You're on the corner of Sunset and Scary.
Oh, I wish it was. I used to be on the corner of Vine and Fountain for the longest time.
I'm sorry.
Lane.
So, what do you want to talk about, Phil?
Well, I listened to your podcast or radio show, Michael Dean After Dark, this morning. That's when I get to listen to it, about software and about we were talking about video editing and whatnot, because that's what I do most of the time out here working in the film industry. I wanted to say that there's a lot of great software out there that can change people's lives, that are cheap and affordable, that allow you to produce a lot of great media, like LibreOffice for open source document processing. And there's also Lightworks for video editing, which I believe is free and very powerful for Linux, Windows, and
now,
Microsoft.
Okay.
It's super cheap.
I have questions about that. First of all, do you use Avid in your day job?
I use Avid in my day job, and I'm editing a webisode series now on Premiere, the Creative Cloud service.
Okay. Now, I made a statement last night that was based on old information. I want to know if it's still true. I said that there was nothing for Linux that was free that was as robust as Premiere. Is that true?
I would check out Lightworks. It looks about, I wouldn't say it's as robust as Premiere, because you have the Adobe Corporation behind it, which is very powerful. They're very well-funded, very well, very productive corporation. But Lightworks looks amazing. I haven't tested it yet, but it looks like a very good option for Linux.
You know, I have a friend that used to work for Adobe as like on their staff as a marketing consultant, and his contribution was really important. And basically what he told them was, early on, he told them to stop going after people who were basically pirating individual for their friends copies of Photoshop. And he said, You know, if you need to go after it later, you can. But for now, you should let this stand. And if you do, the word Photoshop will become a verb.
I totally agree with that. And something that you say all the time, which I empathize with, which is the artist on the most hard drives at the end of their life wins. And I've actually been saying that around Hollywood as much as I can get it out of my mouth, because
it's he who dies with his heart on the most hard drives wins.
I feel like that there is we've grown up in a culture that says that you have to copyright everything and hold on to everything so tightly, otherwise you'll die a poor and destitute, you know, individual. And I tend to say that, well, lately my philosophy, as I've come to understand for myself, liberty and whatnot, that oftentimes it's really about communication. And if you hold on to something so tightly, you're unable to communicate that message or whatever you want to say to the rest of the world. And what good does money do you if you're not actually getting out there and expressing what you want to? And that communication you want with other people, that's the most important thing in the world when it comes to media.
Yeah, well, Hollywood is 100 years old, and it still has a brick-and-mortar mentality that's based on scarcity. And, you know, I mean, the FCC is the same way. The telecoms are run the same way. They're all based on the idea of, like, you know, there was a telegraph at one point and one company owned it and did everything on it. And, you know, now it's like you don't need to build a new network for every new service. I was just reading an article about this today that summed it up really well. You know, like, we have our new thing, Meowbit, for using, you know, .bit domains. You don't have to go build a whole .bit internet. You just install a little bit of software on your computer and then you have it. And Hollywood hasn't really caught up with that. I mean, I guess their idea of catching up with it is making webisodes. Are you in a union?
Sort of. No, I'm not. I'm working mostly in reality television, which I have to say, I'm surrounded by statists.
Do you know Ryan Brown? Do you know Ryan Brown?
I don't know Ryan Brown.
He edited, he does that too. Like, he used to edit, God, what was that movie? That dating show, Elimidate, I think. He used to do all their promos. He's a union guy though, but he edited my film, Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow, the documentary I did that's narrated by Robert Downey Jr. And
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it yet.
You should see it. It's good. You can get it free. You can legally pirate it from the Freedom Fiends torrent link. If you go to the Freedom Fiends site or the Michael Dean site and click on the torrent link, you'll be able to get it free.
I'll check it out, for sure. I wanted. This is actually the first show I've ever called into, or had the actually desire to actually call into, because it's true.
I don't think we even gave out the number. That's how much you wanted to call in. Kudos to that, man.
Oh, thanks. I found that on the website. I listen to Freedom Fiends all the time, and I listen to Michael Dean After Dark when I'm going to work in the morning, and it's my daily dose of people that I can understand as I go into the den of iniquity, as it were. And I'll be perfectly honest. I want to say also that as a libertarian or anarchist, that I find that I get along on both sides of the spectrum. Like, whether it's, I can find a way of getting along with people that are both conservative and liberal, because we're so freedom oriented that we can find the things that we agree with.
Yeah.
And that's great for being in Hollywood until you get to the really important stuff. And it's difficult to actually have any substantive conversation, but you can speak about things like art, and you can speak about things about film or whatnot, and have a really broad agreement on a lot of things. But as soon as you get to the important stuff, I think that everyone begins to forget that it's really about the gun in the room, that all that these discussions are about using violence to make people do what you want to do. And I like that art isn't about that. And I like how your show is about trying to foster people, foster individuals to get their voice out there and have those conversations that are meaningful without having to point the gun at people. I really appreciate what you guys do. I have a lot of fun listening to you every day, so thanks for taking my call tonight. This is great.
That's awesome, man. I'm getting a kick out of someone from Hollywood calling, because my wife and I moved to Wyoming from L.A. area 4 years ago. Basically, I lived in I grew up on the East Coast. I went to San Francisco in 86. I played in some rock bands, got signed, got dropped, toured the world, got a drug habit, got clean, then moved to L.A. in 2001. And lived there until 4 years ago. And I lived
that was your last mistake.
Yeah. I lived at Coronado and Sunset, if you know where that is. And right down from that mini mall that has a burrito shop, a porno video store, and a discount plastic surgery. That is so like Echo Park, man. So I lived down the street from there. I met my wife online and moved in with her in Agora Hills. And then we got guns after someone tried to break in the house. And then we realized we were gun owners in California and didn't like that. So we moved to Wyoming. But yeah, man, I liked LA a lot. I have a lot of critiques of the industry there. But yeah, and it's a cool place to live. You can always find parking and it's pretty good weather.
Oh, it's wonderful weather, and everyone can find something to work on, I guess, is the great thing about Hollywood.
Well, it's so like everybody, you know, the difference between that and San Francisco, like in San Francisco, it's uncool to have ambition. And in LA, it's like required. Like everybody in every coffee shop is writing a screenplay.
That was the first thing I discovered when I started writing in the coffee shops was, first, I'm being cliched, which is hilarious, and I feel like I'm in a movie. And the second thing was that everyone here is doing the thing that you've come to do and feels invigorating. And there's that very entrepreneurial side of LA. And then there's also the very, constrained data side of LA, which is, it's very democratic, the small D democratic side of LA, that everything has to be run through the state and we all have to be agreed. I hate to talk about tyranny, because I know that's the goal.
I got a funny story about screenwriters in Hollywood. You know, in every cafe, there's like people really furiously pounding away, and they all look kind of angry and like frightened, like they're not going to make it, you know, because they're all like trying to sell stuff. And I used to go to this place called the Downbeat in Echo Park. Do you know that cafe?
I don't.
It's a really mellow cafe. Yeah, it's next to the Echo Park Film Center on Alvarado. And there was one guy in there who's older than all the other people trying to write screenplays. And, you know, he's probably about 50, gray-haired, good-looking, distinguished kind of gentleman who was always, like, really relaxed in writing a screenplay and, like, looked – he was always laughing out loud to himself. And I started talking to him one day, and his name's John Rice, and he actually wrote the movie Wind Talkers. So, like, the one guy in a cafe that's actually sold a major film is just laughing, like, all the way to the bank while writing, whereas everyone else is stressed out. I thought that was kind of cool.
I think the one thing that changed for me when I was out here, because I was fairly frustrated for a long time, was trying to get things made, and I'd optioned a few screenplays and been commissioned to write ones, but nothing never really been made. And what changed for me, and I think that for any of your listeners who are frustrated about what they're doing and trying to knock on the door of permission givers, is that, well, as soon as you just start doing it and not asking permission, your whole life changed.
Oh yeah, man. I mean, the 5 years I was in LA, like, I didn't go to parties, I didn't network, I didn't try to meet people. And, you know, people I met when I got there, by the time I left, they had gone back to Ohio because they hadn't sold a screenplay. After 5 years of being there, I directed a documentary that had like Jared Leto in it. It had Ellen Burstyn in it, and it was narrated by Robert Downey Jr. And I was in the studio directing. I didn't do much directing, but I directed him, you know, and basically it was like, I just did it. I didn't ask permission or wait, you know. Thanks for your call, Phil. We're going to take another call, Phil. I appreciate it, man. Call anytime. Take care, worms. Bye. We'll be back with another call on Michael Dean After Dark after this.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
This is Michael Dean After Dark, and I am pasting pictures of cats onto a picture of my co-host, Diana. And, She likes cats. She likes rabbits. Do you eat rabbit? You ever eat rabbit?
If I had to eat a rabbit, I would eat a rabbit. Actually, even if I didn't have to, I probably would, which seems really strange.
I understand. The only animal I've ever hunted and shot and cooked was a rabbit when I was 14. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about cats. We're going to go to the phones right now and talk to Nathan in Texas about kitty cats. Go ahead, Nathan. Let's get him on the air. Are you there, Nathan?
Hey. Yes, I'm here. How are you?
Good. Cool, man. Tell us about cats.
Well, I have a cat with me right now, but she's not the cat that I'm calling about. Have you ever had to give a cat medicine, one of those little, dripper tube things?
Yeah, they don't like it.
They really don't like it. Is there some way, like, that I can do it without having to have two people where one holds the cat down and the other pries its mouth open and tries to, you know?
Are you calling the cat, the live cat show and thing that uses the same number that's delayed 4 hours later?
Yeah, you basically say that.
Okay. What show are you calling?
Michael W. Dean After Dark.
Okay. Just making sure. I'd still answer your question. I don't know, Diana. Do you have any tips for getting medicine into cats?
Well, are you talking about liquid medicine or a pill?
Liquid. The video that I saw on YouTube said, well, for the pill, you have to throw it right down their gullet with a, 3-point shot.
Well, there's a way to open their mouths by, putting your fingers on either side of their jaw mm-hmm. that kind of just naturally forces their mouth open, and you kind of have to, hold them tight with your elbow while you do it if there's no one else to help. But it's a two-man job, really.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can also – one of the things that I've done is wrap mine in a towel.
Make a kitty burrito.
Yeah, a kitty burrito,
what does
the
towel do exactly?
Holds their legs down so they can't scratch you.
Yeah.
You kind of have to act like the state with cats and do what's best for them.
Yeah.
Pretty much. I love the kitty.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. It's not a pleasant experience, but it has to be done.
Yeah, when they're sick and, they have to take their medicine, there's no other way. Yeah, I kind of feel like Mark Edge on Free Talk Live, I just got to do what's good for the animal, right?
Yeah. You can, you could also put it in their food if you don't have other cats and they really like wet food or something. You can mix it in with their wet food. But then if they don't eat it all, you have to figure out how much they didn't get and make it up somehow.
That's a good idea, too. I just figured with so much cat experience, you must be like the cat master or something.
I am the master of cats. That's actually my name on Amazon when I review books. It comes up as Master of Cats, Wyoming.
So what's wrong with your kitty?
He's got the flu, some kind of infection he picked up. I don't know where it came from, but it's had pneumonia, getting coughing a lot, that really yucky wheezing sound. And so the vet made it look easy. She just kind of grabbed by the scruff of the neck and just got it right mm-hmm. in there.
Yeah. Scruffing is okay,
scruffing.
When you have to do it. Obviously you don't want to do it all the time, but they equate it with,
mothers.
Yeah, with mothers, because that's what their mothers do when they want them to do what they want them to do is they grab them by the scruff of the neck. So
yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, I kind of feel like the state when I'm forcing the vial of liquid into his throat. So
it's tough, but you really got to do it. If it's what they need for their health, you kind of have to do it to them. And some people might have libertarian arguments against it, and I'm just like, shut up, man. It's medicine, and it's a cat. And he's not going to take it. I'll just do it. I mean, in a way, when it gets to that point, you have to kind of think of animals as property. I hate to say it, but that's what you got to do. It's like a really little kid. If you have to give if a really little kid has a fever and doesn't want to logically take medicine, if it's life saving, you probably just have to give it to him.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're the custodian of that child animal.
Yeah.
So,
what does Mark Edge do?
Sometimes he talks about his kid and he says, "Well, when Jack is about to walk in the street, I have to use force against him." He's really worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing unethical about knocking someone out of the way of an oncoming car. But really appreciate your call, man. Call in anytime. Hopefully we helped with our non-licensed cat advice. Take care, Nathan. All right, Diana, you got any final worms?
Worms.
Worms.
Worms and kitties.
Worms and kitties.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time and channel. In the meantime, go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening. Good night.